This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Dark Walk, a post-show recap Bridgerton extravaganza. Today is our last show with The Dark Walk, y'all. I know you missed us, or you will miss us, because we're going to miss you. But before we get there, we have one last ball together. So we're all going to dance together, and my first dance partner, the first person to stamp our card, is Miss Sarah. How are you, Sarah? Welcome one last time for season two wrap up.
Well, m'lady, I'm doing beautifully. Thank you. Podcasting today from unceded Gadigal land. I have my tiara. I have my fan. My bosom is strapped and heaving, and I'm ready to go.
Oh, love it. I can't wait to talk more bras later. And the next person to stamp my card is this Kirsten is here. Welcome. Are you ready?
Yes, I am so ready. I feel like I have just lived through an entire London season and I'm ready to retire to the countryside. You'll never see me again.
Except at the end of the podcast when she does all her 11 million plus.
Don't talk to me. I'm so tired. I'm dying. Oh
my God. Pinch your cheeks for redness.
I know.
Oh, she's pinching her cheeks.
Yeah, but they're already pretty red. And the last person to stamp our card, we have Miss Geneva here. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you, thank you. Cannot believe that we are here. We've recorded a number of podcasts since February, basically. So it's been quite a crazy ride. But I'm glad to be here with you all today to kind of put a conclusion on season two and look towards what we'll see in season three. And yeah, it's very, very exciting.
Can't wait. But yeah, so, and I'm your host, Sasha Joseph. Sorry, forgot to introduce myself.
And Sasha, how are you?
Oh, so good. But also, yeah, happy to end this season with you all, season in many ways. So this wrap-up today, we'll really talk through a few of your questions. So thank you to all of you for submitting questions or feedbacks. And we'll kind of talk through what our hopes are for season three, for each family, for, you know, a few pick characters, maybe ones that we won't see again. How are we wanting to bid them farewell? So that's kind of the point of this. So we hope that you walk down the dark walk / memory lane with us one more time. But we already have one of us that's jumping for out of their corset, or no, half stay, sorry, to ask us all a question. So Sarah, take us away.
Thank you very much, Sasha. So happy birthday today to Jonathan Bailey. It's his birthday as we speak. And then tomorrow it is Regé Jean Page's birthday. So my question, particularly to Kirsten, but to the whole panel, is what is it about us Taurians? Why are we such great romantic leads?
Oh, so I would say it's because you're stubborn as hell and you like the finer things. So
exactly.
It all comes together.
Love it. Thank you.
Oh my God. They also,
I mean, way more scared for what that question was going to be.
Yeah. Just like, so everyone knows, pre-show, Sarah was like, no, I have a question you have to ask me first. So we didn't know. Y'all have, it's been now, this is our 10th season 2 podcast. So y'all know Sarah by now. So we were like, how blue will you go? But that was very,
I was pure as the driven snow.
Oh. That is my moon sign, though. You know, an aspect of me.
Tell us more about Taurus, then. Why do you make such good lovers?
I said romantic leads. You took it to the bedroom.
Sure did. I have never heard any evidence that Taurus make good lovers. That's all I'm going to say.
Low-key will. Men will agree.
A strong desire for social and corporate stability. I don't know if that
corporate
necessarily
stability. Yeah, I love corporate stability in the room.
No,
why
no,
is that the first thing you said, Geneva?
Because that's what that's what Google says. So I'm just reading.
Google can take its corporate stability up.
A strong desire for extravagance, contentment, and great things. But like the stuff I'm seeing is not necessarily absurd to see. It's not positive here, so I don't know.
Close the window.
Yeah, I need
close that window.
I need another window.
I mean, it has to be said that that Jonathan and Regajon are birthday gentlemen. Are the Taurians, not necessarily the characters. So we can leave it.
That's
there.
Probably why.
Honestly,
they're steadfast and loyal.
Oh, fuck off!
That's everyone.
Oh my God.
Just everyone?
Everyone's steadfast and loyal.
Especially us Cancers, you know?
You know, Cancer is my rising. So, there you go.
All I'm hearing is that Geneva's secretly toxic today.
Exactly. First of all, don't call out Cancers like that ever again.
Secretly.
Sasha, here's the thing. Every man that's ever ruined my life has been a Cancer, okay?
The Cancer of men, yes, 100%. Because every man that's ruined my life is also a Cancer man.
But at the same time, my current boyfriend, who I'm very happy with, is also a Cancer. So we'll see if he ruins my life or not.
No,
in a good way.
Let's hope energy. He does not ruin your
Get
life.
Him to sign a piece of paper to say that he won't.
I mean,
yeah, I think that is how it works, right? I'll drop a contract that you can won't ruin my life. Okay.
Yeah,
hey, babe, we've been dating 4 months. Can you sign this? Thanks.
Thank
oh
you.
My God.
Thank
Please.
You. And if you do ruin my life, I get to push you into a small body of water in a flowing white shirt.
Oh, my word.
All that's going to do is make me more upset in that circumstance. That's not right.
That's true. But it's like pressing on a bruise. Sometimes it's quite pleasurable.
Jesus Christ.
I don't have time to unpack that.
Yeah. This is not a
50-shade
podcast.
Let's move on.
But anyway, yeah, what other questions? Geneva, I know we have some Discord questions, feedback. Please take us away.
Okay. So in the Discord, we did get a question. Basically, the inquiry we did get was from Sarah, shout out to Sarah. Not Sarah Carradine.
Not me.
Sarah N.
No, we're done with Sarah Carradine's questions for today.
Yay!
No more toxicity.
No, that's not it. But basically, we wanted to know our hopes for season 3.
Oh, good question.
And also wanted to just kind of generally find out just generally what our predictions are for what they'll do, and if anyone plans to read ahead.
Ooh,
I've already read ahead.
Yeah.
So I can speak to that. My hope is that they continue to deviate from the books for season 3. Because the third book, like, I like the third book. I like all of them because I'm like a sick person who loves like pretty most romance novels you put in front of me, I'm gonna enjoy. But the Benedict storyline is not the most compelling, especially when the setup on the show for Benedict was like, maybe he's queer, maybe he's gonna be exploring like very different lifestyles. Whereas in the third book, Benedict basically falls in love at first sight with a girl who at a masquerade ball who's not supposed to be at the ball because she's like essentially a Cinderella type figure. And then they meet years later and it's like they had kissed at this masquerade and like both of them can't stop thinking about this one kiss. And that's obviously their soulmate. So it's like that's not that exciting. So I would like them to do pretty much literally anything else with Benedict's story.
Oh, interesting. Do we think it'll be Benedict?
I think that he'll be the one who gets like married, but we'll see Ooh. Progression in all of the other stories.
I think yeah. that now that we, you know, on first watch season two, we felt there wasn't enough focus on the main character and while we, the main couple. And while we still think that, I think with the rewatch and our appreciation of the weaving together of all the side characters, I think with season three, if they continue with that sort of weaving multi-character story, I think we're going to enjoy it more. I think our expectations were very high that there was going to be a lot of Kate and Anthony content. Given that there wasn't, I really like the way the minor characters are woven in. And so that's my hope for season three, that they continue to develop these minor characters and perhaps bring in some more so that while the main couple is the focus, they aren't the overbearing majority of the screen time as Simon and Daphne were in season one.
Yeah, but yeah. would you say that Kate and Anthony were even the focus? Because I wouldn't. And
absolutely not.
I think that's a problem. Really I think not. That they should have been the main focus.
Yeah, that's been. What we've been, I mean, yelling about, right, this whole season. And like I said, I don't even care to know about them at now. You know what I mean? Like, I think they had their chance. So I don't want to set that up, like, to be this waterfall or this boulder that keeps rolling down the hill of like bleeding into others. Mm-hmm. So let's see, but I'm not into it. And I did hear in a interview, right, that Jonathan Bailey, who plays Anthony, said that he's excited for the characters of Colin and Penelope to take mm-hmm. center stage, whatever that means.
Yeah, and I think, and I heard Simone Ashley's supposed to be back for season three, so my guess is maybe, at minimum, you know, she will probably be present with, you know, the storylines within the Bridgerton household to some extent. I don't know, though, how much they'll focus yeah. on the relationship. I'm intrigued to see if we'll see anything related to that. And then I think when it comes to the potential relationships, I think that we will see develop, I think, you know, Colin Penelope, of course, I think probably they'll also go with potentially Benedict and then also go with Eloise, maybe, just because
that's a lot of story. That's a lot of story.
It is, but I feel like they've had a lot of, you know, subplots and they kind of mm-hmm. those three, you know, kind of had things going on in the season along when Kate and Anthony were having things. So I anticipate they're probably going to try and continue to tell their stories in some way or some capacity. It'll be a question of though whether you know, I think who will be the prominent focus, if it will be, you know, Penelope and Colin, but I still feel like I'm not too sure. I think one thing I'm also intrigued to see is how what will be the aftermath of Eloise and Penelope and how that is handled.
Yeah, and the other thing too that kind of goes hand in hand with that, one thing that I really like about Colin and Penelope's story is that it happens like 7 years after book three, like when, so it's like 10 years after Daphne gets married, basically, that Colin and Pen get their story because he's been off like traveling the world, right? And so I like the idea that their love is one that grows and matures over time and that they needed to be in different places in their lives to like have each other and appreciate that love. So like, for me, I would love if for like seasons 3 and 4, we get like stirrings of Ooh. Maybe they're starting to have moments that seem like it could be or like something along those lines. And then, you know, season 5, which is the last one that's renewed, that's when it all comes together and it delivers and gives us like an actual genuine slow burn rather than like what they pretended was a slow burn this season. I think that would be like really meaningful to watch. And so
I like that, Kirsten. You should be in the writer's room.
Hire me. I'm poor. I would take money.
And I mean, considering what we saw in basically towards the end of the season and how, you know, Colin was talking with the boys negatively about Penelope, I think maybe that's a way for the show to take a step back and kind of, you know, slow, you know, make the pace between their relationship a lot slower. So maybe in season three, kind of like you're saying, we're going to kind of see a really, you know, slow progression building back to maybe a friendship and something more, because, you know, he kind of deflected, obviously, to not look bad, but obviously that was kind of an annoying situation.
I'll be very intrigued to see what happens with the Featheringtons. I mean, they've had an arc of sorts. They invented embezzlement and Ponzi schemes. Yeah. I would like to see them now move on from that. Where they take them, I don't know. I'd be dissatisfied if it was yet again they're struggling for money, yet again Portia, my darling Portia, is desperate. I don't know where to take them. Kirsten can tell us because she's entrenched in that writer's room. Perhaps Portia has a little dalliance with a footman.
Yeah, so the only thing is,
yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Is like it's weird because like the struggle with money is absolutely part of the Featherington story, and I think that they're going to have to address it at least one more time, because the ultimate resolution is that Penelope starts using the Lady Whistledown money to supplement the family's income so that they can live like a life along the level that everyone else is having. And so I think that they're going to have financial trouble one more time so that that comes to a head. And I think that that's the ultimate result of all the scenes we get of Penelope with all her money under the floorboards, right? Is like they don't show us that for nothing. So what's the mm-hmm. payoff to that? It's you that money helping the family. Or I guess if that money got stolen, but who's stealing it, right?
Not exactly. And not Eloise.
Yeah. And so Portia and the other two young ladies will have to revise their opinion of Penelope. I mean that's a really interesting way to go.
Well, and I think I'm pretty sure in the book, one of the Featherington sisters married Nigel Burbrook. So it's very curious that they've completely diverged from that plot, because like they're not bringing him back. They made him out to be a total ass. So I don't know what they're going to do. It's already so different from the books.
Yeah. But I think my hope for the Featheringtons is like, yeah, we know that they're not necessarily going to be 100% or like Bridgerton rich, even though, right, they live so close in proximity to each other. I think I'm hoping that they get something else. You know, I'm over that storyline, because it was really exciting to see Portia kind of, you know, be the OG embezzler. Like that was cool. So if they're able to create something like that, right, where it's something like she has agency even in the brokenness, then fine. Mm-hmm. Or Penelope, right, maybe has the agency now. But either way, that's I think what I'd like for the Featheringtons. Like, are we gonna get a love interest for Portia?
I'd love like, her to have a love interest.
They were teasing us because
I'd like it.
Yeah, because I'm wondering with Cousin Jack, you know, were they like, oh, how is the audience going to deal? Or, you know, how are they okay with Portia getting a love interest? Like, were they testing us low key? Because we do get a kiss. So that's my like question, hope for Featheringtons is like we get something out of
that.
Well,
there will also be, I feel like, some fallout because she was supposed to marry Jack and now he's leaving town in disgrace. And what consequences does that have for her reputation?
For Prudence.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Prudence is fine. You can just put her in a corner with a piece of string and she'll be happy.
Listen. Yeah, but her reputation.
Yeah.
Like, that's damaged now, and I want to see the fallout of that.
That might be the
Well, Cressida dodged a bullet, right?
Yeah, well, and they still don't have a dowry for the other Featherington daughter, right? Like, that engagement was settled with a promise to pay, and now they have no means to pay.
Yeah, for Mr. Finch, right? But
yeah.
They're already married, correct?
Philippa,
or no?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Philippa and Mr. Finch are married.
That ship has sailed. I'm gonna cross my fingers.
Yeah, I hope so.
That they're kind of, hopefully that they're just stuck and that we don't get like a lot of like almost like Indian TV show, you know, like where it's so dramatic, like, oh, I have to come back from my in-laws' house. Like, I don't need all that.
Yeah.
Like, no, I just hope that there is some resentment maybe towards the Featherington Portia Jack situation, but not like a whole, her whole life is ruined.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And what do we think then, since we're on the Featheringtons, will happen now that Lady Whistledown has been shown to Eloise? Do we think more people are going to know next season about Penelope? Because we got her voice a little at the end of season two.
I don't think Eloise will tell. I think she's furious and she's like doesn't want the friendship right now, but I still don't think she would tell.
Yeah, I don't think she'll tell. I just mean, do we think that like Penelope
might be discovered?
Yeah.
It might be discovered. Yeah, well, I mean, if Portia goes poking around her daughter's room, she might find some interesting things.
Maybe she's looking for some money to pay future dads, you know? So, and then, oh, Penelope happens to have some money. Where did this come from? No, I'm just kidding. But
yeah, I don't think that she's like going for floorboards. Like, I think she's a shrewd woman, but I think that the problem there is that all of them underestimate Penelope so much that they would never expect her to have something hidden so well that they would never look for it.
But if she comes up with some cash, they'll have to. Sorry, Geneva. They'll have to ask a question. Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, like, for instance, I was like literally shook when I saw like Eloise like all over the place in Penelope's room, like, you know, the floorboards, the bed, everything. I was just like, okay. But I kind of think that I feel like Eloise is not gonna say anything. But I feel like there are so many points in the season where Penelope really try to like drop hints. I feel like she doesn't really want to keep it as much of a secret anymore. So I think it's possible that she could potentially slip up. I think that's definitely a possibility, or maybe you know, a person or two might find out kind of about her, you know, alter ego, her new other identity. So but I guess we'll see.
The way that she gets exposed in the book is that at the start of the season, Lady Danbury says, I will pay £1,000 to whoever unmasks Lady Whistledown to me. And at the end of the season, she exposes herself and collects the
£1,000. Oh, that's hilarious.
Oh, that's smart.
So that's what the queen is going to do, I'm wondering. And the Featheringtons need the money.
Yeah, so that's why I'm wondering, like, if maybe that won't happen because they've had the queen kind of serve that, book four situation since season. I don't know. It's hard to say. But you know what? The Featheringtons invented embezzlement. Now they can invent money laundering.
That's what I'm saying.
Question. In the book, does it, like, does it mention, like, Colin's response to any of this?
So it comes out the way that all of it comes out, and I have not read Colin's book in a little while, so please forgive me for any small inaccuracies if anyone listening is like, Kirsten, you're an idiot. But the way it comes out, and a lot of these things all happen at once, and so it's like Penelope and Colin get engaged, and then I think right before they get engaged, she tells him the truth, but they're going to keep it a secret. And like he's supportive of her writing because he also wants to be a writer. Because he writes about his travels.
His letters should have been a bit more interesting. Hey, Geneva.
We get snippets of his writing in Colin's book, and honestly, it's not good. Like, he's not a talented writer.
Aww. But that's why his wife
she could tutor him in writing.
Yeah. Maybe she could write for him and just his name will be on it.
He'll be Mr. Whistledown. Oh my god.
Yeah, she could be his ghostwriter or something.
Yeah. Great. So I think that wraps up our like Featherington moment. What are we, you know, let's go closest to Featherington. So Eloise, who I feel like had one of the biggest arcs of this season, like, what are we thinking, or what are our hopes for her, for our little like budding activist?
Is she gonna be back with her little printer's
devil
guy,
Theo? Yeah, that's the question, right? Is it him, or will it be the actual love interest from the book?
It won't be him yet. It's not like her love interest from the books is married to Marina right now.
Exactly.
And is like Marina's still alive. So I feel like they have to like, because the Marina has to be dead a year before they can be together because of mourning. So like they have to kill Marina off if she's going to have the same love interest as in the books. Mm-hmm. I hope not, because I like Marina and I'd like her to have a happy life with Sir Philip.
Yeah, I'd like her to have, but you know, a weird strong scene as she did in season two. A couple of short scenes and stuff.
Also, though, like, Eloise and Sir Philip is a weird dynamic and their whole relationship is odd and that book is weird and, like, it doesn't make sense. Like, she... It's like, oh, when she saw that his wife died, she started writing him letters and she's been corresponding with him for years. And then he had like written her a letter like, come marry me. And she shows up without warning anyone. So she's there with no chaperone. And like the kids are like,
she's not again.
Yeah. So she shows up to his house with no chaperone. And he's like, but you should have told me you were coming. I could have had like my mom come so that there'd be a chaperone. And then it's like, they like fall in love, but his kids are like demons and like try to chase her away. Like it's weird and it's not a good story. And so I actually really would prefer that they change it a lot because it's weird.
There may be a member of the Ton of the male gender, which is a construct, as we know, who is attending these radical meetings. I mean, it is possible that her passion for ideas, which is mixed up with her passion for Theo, could also be taken up by someone with a title.
Yeah, but we've already seen that option for her, and she like stormed away from him at the ball.
Exactly. No, but I mean somebody at the radical meetings she's been going to. The consciousness raising of the Regency period.
It's so weird. So yeah, like what are they gonna do with Theo? Like be like, oh yeah, that was a good run. Like, oh, by Theo. You know, it's weird. Or is he gonna get transferred to another post? Like it makes sense.
He dies under a hot press.
Oh God.
What a way to go.
I hope not. But
But I agree. I do like Marina and I do like Ruby Barker who plays Marina. A couple days ago I actually sent you guys this weird tweet she posted like a little behind the scenes 3 days ago, and she said she had a picture of Oliver number 4, which was the nightmarish doll that she had for Bridgerton rehearsals, like in place of the baby, who kind of reminded her of a horror film character.
It's the scariest. It's the scariest doll I've ever seen. Yeah, it's horrible.
Like, oh my gosh, what is this?
I don't like
it. They really are acting, baby.
Why couldn't they use like a CPR dummy? Like they make infant CPR dummies. Why can't you use that for your like
or a sack of potatoes? Like honestly, yeah,
or even so,
they don't have any arms and legs. CPR dummies only have heads and chests.
What's it called? When I was in eighth grade,
no, the baby ones are. It's a full body because baby CPR, you have to like flip them over your arm, so you had they
and you have to like, use two fingers.
Like yeah, this. Like there's I've had training on CPR on babies. Mm-hmm. They have a whole body.
When I was in eighth grade, we had this like baby project with like an electronic baby that like actually screamed and cried and everything like that. I think that would have been better because they're actually a lot cuter.
They're horrible terrors. And
they're terrors though. Actually, mine, my what's it called? Mine was like broken, so like the sensor wouldn't work. So like it just screamed all night.
I had that in the 12th grade. Torture. It was our family planning.
I think that's
class.
Called croup, Geneva.
Oh, it was horrible.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
When they cry all night.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Anyway, it was a
yeah, moment. No, that was horrifying. I hated it. Speaking of these Bridgerton people on social media, have any of you been getting these constant TikTok videos of the Bridgerton actors all singing Party in the USA and like all the time?
I actually do not have the TikTok.
Yeah, I don't have a TikTok either, so I have not.
Okay, whatever. You use your time well. It's fine.
So yeah, because I'm an addict, so I cannot.
I keep getting served these videos of the cast that play the Bridgertons. Specifically, it seems like it might be Gregory's account, whoever that actor is.
Oh, I've seen. Okay, the three of them. Yeah, Gregory, yeah, and Hyacinth, like, and one of them.
Yeah, but like it's all of them. Like it'll be like, okay, there's Anthony Benedict, there's Violet, there's Eloise, there's Hyacinth, and they're just lip syncing to Party in the USA. It is deeply troubling. I do not want to see children on my TikTok page at all. Like,
correct.
I can't stand it.
That part.
But it's happening.
The children.
Oh my God.
What? I just feel like it's weird to watch kids. I'm 30. What do I need with a kid I don't know on social media? It's not right.
I do and like people.
The kid maybe that, you should have blocked the content or something.
Yeah,
I don't
you're
know.
Right. I should just block the account next time it pops up.
Here. I'm surprised there's no Bridgerton musical part two, you know, because that was the biggest thing after season one.
Well, but that's because they're actually producing the musical.
Oh.
Like they're busy.
That's As real. They that's should. Real. Oh my
you
God.
Think?
I love it.
Yeah, also, I'm pretty sure that's what she's working on.
Yeah, that makes sense. I remember knowing that it got picked up. I just didn't know what happened.
I mean, you know that they won like a Grammy.
What?
Yeah.
What?
The unofficial Bridgerton musical like won a Grammy for like best musical theater album.
This is nonsense.
No.
Yes.
What? Listen,
Janika, you're from musical theater. What did you think of it? What's your opinion? What did you give us?
To be honest, I haven't looked at it because I haven't had TikTok, but I should just pull up the links and stuff to actually like give it a serious listen.
Oh, you'll have to give a little bit back.
Of it, but not, it's well, like some of the songs are good. I've heard most of it through TikTok.
Me too.
And like some of the songs are good. Some of them I think are stupid, but regardless, I don't think it ever got released as a full album, so how can it win a Grammy?
They apparently did in September.
Yeah, it's the first Grammy win for TikTok.
Yeah, wow. And but the TikTok what videos amassed over 273 million views combined.
This is how I know I'm old, because I'm horrified at the concept
right?
of this.
Oh my God, we're just like, this can't be true.
Get off it. My lawn, let me I yell at a cloud.
I know.
Yeah.
And
well,
now
that again?
We gave you this info, I'm assuming you all need a break, because we do.
I sure do.
From learning this Grammy news. So with that, we're going to take a little break and come right back.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
And we're back. I hope you could gather yourself from that devastating news. I'm just kidding. No shade.
I'm
like,
not
it's
okay.
actually a good.
Like go
some sounds are good. Like I've heard it on Spotify. It's fine. But anyway, let's get into more Bridgerton kids, because we just finished Eloise. What do we think about Benedict and Colin?
I don't know.
Well, right? they baited us in season one with Benedict's potential queerness. I think they stepped back from that in season two. It doesn't mean they can't bring it forward. He was somehow less interesting in season two, which is a shame, because he was always my number two Bridgerton child.
He was
child.
My number one, man.
Well, they focused on go. Him and T.
Yeah.
But not even, like, he was like the weird comic relief that wasn't, like, that one gif of him, right, like, at dinner is the cutest thing. But outside of that, I was like, okay, Benedict, like, I don't know. Again, season two, like, they sucked the air out of a lot of the characters. And I'm hoping that Benedict is able to kind of recover from Anthony paying to get him in, which is so funny, because I was like, oh, is this how legacies were born? Where, you know, these
The Bridgertons invented legacies.
See? There you go. Legacies.
Good old legacy.
There you go. Anthony invented it. But so I'm excited to see where he goes, or will he, you know, do anything with it? But Anthony, the parting line for Anthony and Benedict, right, was the whole, you know, exactly like you're a good therapist, basically. So I appreciated that. But let's see what happens with Benedict, especially if it's his story. Because he
well,
just kind of goes where the wind goes.
We've had the swing chats a couple of times with Eloise,
right,
where they both confess to not feeling like they fit in. He certainly feels like he fits in art world with all the people there, including he's fitting in very nicely with one of the models. He was very willing to take his clothes off and model himself, so he has this alternative. The one thing that gives me hope about his art career is the way he finds out that Anthony paid for him was his fellow student says, oh, you know, your painting's very good. So you know, it wasn't just that we thought it was just that you were getting that you were being paid to be here, but in fact you are showing some talent. So right. While that was a devastating blow for Benedict, it does say that the opinion of his fellow students, which is going to be the harshest of all, is that he's an okay painter.
Well, and in the books, he does his art kind of like in secret. Like he doesn't want to tell his family that he wants to do it. And it's like shameful for him.
I love that his family like celebrates it, even though Anthony was mad and called it doodling. But Anthony did also pay to get him.
He still paid for it.
Exactly. Anthony's a good dad.
Good dad, oh gosh, yeah.
Like, honestly. And I think Colin, we talked about him with Penelope. So I'm just hoping he gets his, like, fun back, gets his groove back. Please. A little bit because, again, in the second book, he was so funny. I liked him a lot.
He's really funny in the first book, too. He's just, like, a really like fun, nice character. I love him.
Got it. Yeah. So I'm going to hope that if he is center or second to center, he gets, you know, some more personality pumped into him.
Yeah. I mean, he learned mischievousness from his father. We learned that his father poured glue into his shoes and maybe that was
Benedict,
the
right?
That.
Yeah, it was Benedict.
Oh, it was Benedict.
No, it's fine. Either way.
I mean, it still goes to show, like, their dad was mischievous and pranky, and then Colin has that trait. Like, it doesn't negate that point.
No, that's the thing. I wanted to see more of that mischievousness that we, like, with, you know, Kate and Anthony, like, in the book. But, alas, you know.
Exactly.
I think the focus was, on some of his.
Eloise, yeah.
On Eloise, some of Colin's past, you know, trying to see what's up with Marina. Like that
was so random. Like I still can't believe he went and saw her and nothing came of it. Like I was like, okay, and what?
Well, no, I know what you mean in terms of plot, but in terms of like character study, I thought it was fantastic. I loved seeing Marina. Any chance I have, I'm like Geneva, any chance I have to see her, I'm really happy. And I thought it was the way she dealt with this young ungrown puppy, I thought really affected him, despite the fact he's learnt the wrong lesson because he says, oh, she says she's happy, but I don't think she's happy. Come on, guy. Come on.
Yeah.
I mean, that's I think, pretty basic. She said no. It must mean I need to try harder.
No. And actually, Ruby had even tweeted herself, who plays Marina. She said, you know, you have to try and find sympathy for your characters. And Marina got a really tough hand dealt to her. She's the mess getting brushed under the carpet. And I love that her story shows that it wasn't always a happy ending in the ton. Don't hate the player, hate the game.
Ooh. Love
I
it.
I will hate whomever I need to hate.
But I guess that was the only realistic way at that time to kind of tie in Marina's character, you know, like, and utilize her beyond season one. Because, I mean, otherwise there wasn't really too much of a connection.
Yeah, that's real. We shall see. And now, you know, for the main story, what are our hopes for Mr. Anthony and Miss Kate or Mrs. Kate now? You know, because we allegedly they're coming back. Will we see them? Because we got the epilogue, right, that they he lived, obviously he lives for a long time. I think 98 is what she said. And what the author said, but also we get to see him with his kids in the epilogue. So do we think we're going to get that like in the next few seasons?
Well, in the same way that we saw Daphne, I mean, I'm hoping that we don't get a lot more from them than we got of Daphne in this season. You know, present, changed, married, maybe with some kids, but not that focus on them because much though I love them and I do love them, we've had them. I want to move on to the next couple.
So, you know, that one scene where Anthony, like, you know, holds up the number of fingers. So there's been a lot of reference to this on social media where he's like, you know, how many fingers am I holding up? And then she'll be like three. And then he like switches it to four. And so a lot of people have been talking about the symbolism of how in the books, in reality, ended up turning out being four children. So very intrigued to see maybe how, if that symbolism is tied to what we will end up maybe seeing come in future seasons. But
Maybe she has them all at once. Maybe they have four all at once. That would certainly get that number going.
It would. That would be crazy.
Oh, my God.
I don't know. I think that, like, Anthony's going to be a big character for the whole rest of the series because he's out of the family, right?
So, mm-hmm.
Yeah. I hope that doesn't mean that Violet will retreat, because I like Violet and I wanted more Violet.
I mean, Violet already has retreated.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I think by virtue of, like, how the family structure is, I think we'll see a lot more Violet on seasons where a female Bridgerton is to be wed than any season where one of the boys is.
Yeah. I think that's
insightful.
Yeah,
that's very insightful.
A good one. Also, you know, leaving now them, what are our hopes for Edwina now that she's, you know, allegedly going to stay for one more season? We're not going to hear from Edwina again. So I'm hoping that her and Mary are able to secure some man for her in the new season.
She getting the prince?
I just love the if prince. He got the prince.
Why that's can't the they prince. Just give her the prince, right? Like,
the queen even said,
the queen,
right?
The queen was like,
the prince. So I think the only barrier to her having the prince is if she doesn't want the prince.
She right. wants the prince.
She I wants mean, the prince.
Yeah.
I mean, why, we liked why him. Not, right?
Yeah, so. We liked him. Yeah.
I wish they would have just given it to, you know what I mean? Just like ended with that. Like Kate could have said the line, I can't wait to see Edwina and Prince Friedrich. You know, something just so I would have like, it would have been in a nice little bow, but whatever. Fine.
I guess that we were supposed to infer, I guess.
No, I doubt. That. Right? You think?
I think we're supposed to infer that sure. it's coming.
Based on
it's
what just, the queen like, said.
It's just hard to say, too, because it's like, obviously, we all like stories wrapped up in little bows. And the way a romance novel works is the story is wrapped up in a little bow and then you move to the next. And because this is a TV show, they can't do that. They have to leave us with loose threads to build off of next season.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
I think that we'll see something with the prince.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, because I just thought that we're not just going to see. But, yeah, okay, so maybe we might.
I think there's a possibility maybe there could be a potential scene in season 3 that just shows that.
Or
but
maybe,
not,
like, Kate is missing from a couple episodes because she's in Prussia.
Oh, yeah, I could see that. Cool. Yeah, that is our hope for Edwina. Unfortunately, Mary just didn't have a lot in the season, so I don't really know what my hope is. Just I hope she, you know, rides off into the sunset with a happy, special friend that keeps her company.
Please.
Ooh. Yes,
I hope she's happy.
And now for the spinoff queen, literally. Are we getting the spinoff anytime soon, do y'all know? Or are we still just going to have the queen be gossipy AF?
Maybe in a year. I don't know.
Oh, okay, cool. So, yeah, I think for the queen, what we're going to really get is she's still going to be a big part of the plot. And I think she's going to, because it seems like the writers really like her. So I think she's going to be the driver in a lot of ways, or at least especially her and Whistledown. I think we're going to get way more content as well. And same with Madame Delacroix. I think we're going to get some version of like Whistledown and business enterprise. Moment. And then the last one I feel like is Lady Danbury.
Oh, just before we leave the Queen, I mean, it just occurs to me too that the historical King George did go mad. He had blue urine, so they pretty much know the disease that they think he had that would give him the mental health problems. But the thing is, he did recover. He recovered his senses and came back to himself. So wow. I wonder if the writers will use that, depending on whether they can move the dates, you know, squish the dates around, and perhaps we will get the queen with the king restored to her, which would be a beautiful ending to their story. Maybe not in season 3, but in a season to come, that we will see the sort of proto-love story that we have about them that was referred to in this season. Perhaps the king will recover his wits and she will get him back again, which is what I'd love for the queen.
Another thing with that, though, I think it's very weird that we haven't seen the Prince Regent at all in Bridgerton seasons 1 and 2, who was, right? like, actually head of government and known to show up to ton parties from time to time.
Yeah, he was like Harry. So it's very funny. No bare butts for him. Mm-hmm. Oh. Yeah, I have no idea. I feel like they really love the queen, and that's who we need to get on board with, basically.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just don't want to because I don't I don't love it. I just don't understand.
You're resisting.
Why she cares.
Well, you're a spinoff resisting. Is coming.
Yeah, I think I'll like the spinoff because I feel like I'll actually make more care sense. About what's yes, going on with exactly. her when she's young and like becoming a queen. Whereas right now, when she's already queen, like I just don't give a flying fuck about what's going on with her. I just don't. Yeah.
No, I agree with you. Like, I just think that because my brain is like, historically, it's not computing. So it doesn't work, but mm-hmm. it's okay. I think she like moves the story forward. I just feel like Lady Danbury could have been that character. Like,
yes.
But it's okay. We love them both. Both can shine.
They're both great actresses.
That's why I think it's hard for me to like really not because I was like, but I like them.
Mm-hmm. The performances yeah. are just phenomenal.
Yeah.
That's what it yeah.
is.
Yeah.
And I think Lady Danbury's gonna seems like is going to be almost the parent for every Bridgerton like romance partner. Like I'm wondering, Kirsten, like you said for book three, mm-hmm. you know, like will Lady Danbury kind of end up figuring out who the Cinderella moment or you know will that person be working for Danbury like oh, at this Lord. Point I'm like my
yeah
God.
I could see them making her a mater companion for Lady Danbury mm-hmm. just to tie Danbury more into the story. I'm racking my brain like Lady Danbury is in every book but she only really plays a major role in Hyacinth's book.
Got it.
So they've already like really extended her power in every story. And I can only assume that they would continue to extend that by having her hire this woman like a year later or whatever.
Then it's like, but also I will say the only negative to that is like, I think it's going to get too predictable, right? Okay. So Lady Danbury, like it seems like the Bridgertons and Lady Danbury should have like then just some kind of a, like a contract of like, okay, looks like our kids are only going to marry people connected to you. So who else you got? Like, let's make it happen. So we'll see. I think that might happen just because I don't know how else they can really write her in from a distance. Like, I feel like her and Violet have the whole, like, well, we're good matchmakers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're like two little buds together.
Yeah, which is also cute. And it works, I think.
Yeah, it does.
They're good fixers, I will say. I agree. Olivia Pope's descendant maybe from Danbury. We don't know.
So Shondaland legacy continues.
But yeah, that was all the characters I had written down. Do y'all have any other folks you're wanting to bring here?
Not to bring up, but I did receive some tweets with questions for us that I'm scrolling to find right now.
Yes.
If anyone wants to like put in a short distraction. Okay, no, I found it. We're good. Okay, so they have lots of questions. Some we've already touched on. But I think the main one that we should focus on, and these are from @PensBridgerton on Twitter. And they would like to know what our thought is on the absolute lack of queer characters in season two after we had seen some of that introduced in season one and how we feel about that for season two.
Absolute disgrace.
Yeah, it's weird, right? Like, again, it's not like queer people didn't exist in this time. Yeah. So why are we shying away, right? Like, if you're going to be intersectional, be intersectional, not just when it comes to, like, maybe race. And even race is, like, very, right, like, binary, black and white or, you know, white with Indian, right? Whatever. Like, it doesn't need to be, like, interracial relationships can mean many races, not just mm-hmm. one. And it's the same for the queer story, which is why we're wishing Benedict to be queer at this point, because I think it makes sense. It would be beautiful to watch. I think he can't get married, right? So
Queer people have been getting married for millennium and continue to do so.
So I mean, legally, they don't necessarily marry each other.
I don't
think it was allowed.
No, they could marry someone of the other apparent gender.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I meant like
and right. what you do.
Yeah, I could see them doing something really interesting with Benedict being, you know, romantically involved with a man and they want to be together, but they can't legally marry each other, so they both just pick women that will look the other way, or maybe women that themselves are queer and want to be with each other. And then they could just be like really close couples, friends, and nobody will know outside of like maybe little whispers about it. That could be one really interesting thing they could do with Benedict's story that changes the narrative.
Yeah. And I think
we know from his mentor, you know, his mentor artist is queer with a wife that is enjoying being the wife of the you know titled artist, and she's completely accepting of his sexuality because then she gets to have threesomes with the gorgeous Madame Delacroix and Benedict in that case. So they gave us a glimpse of that in season one, that kind of all bodies, all love is love lifestyle, and they really stepped back from it in season two, which was disappointing.
I think one thing that's interesting that we've talked a lot about in the context of the show is that often they didn't really stick with the book and there's a lot of inspiration rather than adaptation. So this is a situation where I feel like if we're going more with inspiration, then I feel like there's probably a lot more flexibility to, you know, kind of tell Benedict's story in a creative way or to tell someone else's story in a creative way. Cause I feel like we've gotten these little, you know, teases. I think that that's something that could be explored more. And similarly, like, yeah, you know, maybe they feel like, oh, we want to keep at least the main people with the people that they're in the books. But I feel like there's still a way they could go about it, kind of like some of the ideas we've touched on, whether, you know, that they find, you know, a partner to marry in public, but then in reality, you know, having, you know, an LGBT like lover or something within the confines of the story. So I think I feel like the show has that sort of flexibility to do so, considering it's not necessarily following things line by line in the book.
Yeah, another thing that just like inspiration that just struck is I really wish they'd make Eloise queer. I think that it would make her character make so much more sense and feel more grounded and realistic, because like it just seemed fake to me how much she cared about stupid Theo, and I would love it if she thought the way about a lady.
I felt she was excited by his ideas and she was excited by his not kowtowing to her as a person from the Ton. So yeah, if she found a lady with whom to exchange ideas, I think it would be really exciting. There's a great follow on Twitter if you feel for it. It's the letters between Virginia Woolf and Vita Sackville-West, and they are very frank and absolutely delightful letters of two married ladies of a later time, of the Victorian times, who were passionate lovers, and the way they speak to each other and what they talk about is fantastic. So you get a little excerpt from a letter every day. So you're reading these beautiful love letters, but also they're knowing that they were living outside society's norms but still having to cover up. Although I just read one from Virginia where she said a lady in the post office asked her, but how do ladies do it together, which I thought was absolutely brilliant. You're standing there ready to post your parcels and some woman says to you, yeah, tell me what this lesbian stuff's all about. So, I mean, I think that either Benedict or Eloise are kind of the perfect conduit for a queer love story. And
or
while
even
we're saying
both, because they're already like besties in the family.
Exactly.
It's true. It's true. Or maybe, you know, we'll see. We'll see. We have hope.
My hopes aren't that high, but I wish that my wishes are high.
Or if they don't make a, you know, a Bridgerton, you know, character, you know, queer, maybe they could choose one of the other characters, like, you know, prominent side characters.
Cressida.
Listen, I could come around on actually liking Cressida if she's like, actually a bully because she's being forced into a role that she doesn't want. Like, that at least gives her some sort of compelling reason to be. Like, as of right now, she's just rude for no reason.
Mm-hmm. She could let that hair down and dress in men's clothes. We might come around to her. Ooh, I'm getting quite excited.
Okay. But that was all I had to bring to the table.
That's a great question. Thank you very much to the person who sent that in.
And if you want to know more, there's a Bollywood movie with exactly that plot. So would recommend. Yeah, it's called Badaido on Netflix. But yeah, literally that plot. So do we have any other questions, y'all?
I don't think so.
Well, then I have a question. As people are emerging from their Bridgerton cocoon, there's lots of chatter on Twitter about people saying, phew, I've finished, I feel spent, I feel excited, I feel lost. What would we all recommend for people to perhaps dive into during the wait for season 3?
Ooh, Sasha, what was that movie we both watched on Netflix? That was so cheesy.
Oh, God. Not Lost City that we just
watched. But that was good, too. Lost City was a really great rom-com with Sandra Bullock.
I tagged you in it, too.
Well, you tagged me recently.
Oh, the Royal Treatment. The Royal Treatment.
Yeah, but the Royal Treatment was a Netflix original movie that was very fun, rom-com vibes. If you want to read books, I always recommend The Spanish Love Deception is a more recent romance novel that came out that's really great. It has fake dating and enemies to lovers, so that's really fun. If you want kind of a Regency vibe, there's a series by Jen DeLuca that goes well met, well played, well matched, and they are romance novels set at a Renaissance fair. So that could give you kind of your... a little bit of historical, but it's not actually. Those ones are really good. So those would be some recs from me.
Yeah, I would recommend, Gentleman Jack, which is a British TV series. It's based on the diaries of Anne Lister. Anne Lister, who was a queer woman living in Yorkshire in 1832. And we have her diaries. She wrote millions of words. She wrote down absolutely everything she did. And she had a series of lovers, many of whom left her to get married to men, as was the convention. And it's not perfect, but it's I really enjoyed it. It gives you that sort of 1832 queer life, and a lot of her friends and family just know that she is like that, or he is like that because of the cross-dressing that happens as well. And season 2 has just dropped, so that's worth the watch. Made by BBC One, and you can watch it on HBO or binge in Australia.
Yeah, and I would say I would recommend Helen Huang. It's a really cool 3 books as well. I think the third book, Heart Principle, is I liked it the most. I think that's the third one. But yeah, would recommend all 3 of them. They're an Asian American writer, and they're all set in San Francisco or the Bay Area. So it's like a cool techie vibe to it. And I think at least one of the characters in each book, like one of the main love interest, has I believe Asperger's or is on the I don't know that. Yeah,
there's an autistic main character.
Yes, thank you. Because she is herself, so that's why she writes them in, and it's really beautiful to see how just, you know, she makes it normal because it is normal. So yeah, I'd recommend that.
That also reminded me, Sasha, of the book, the I think it's called, which one is it? Because now I'm getting the Helen Huang ones confused, and I don't want to just recommend the exact same book. Yeah, so The Love Hypothesis by Ali Hazelwood. It is another good one, and it's also set in the Bay Area.
Of course. Oh my God, let me add this to my
I think there's gonna be a sequel to that one, which is gonna be a queer relationship too, so I'm excited for that. At least I think that's what's coming based on the first book, so fingers crossed.
And if you like younger young adult novels, I would say Mismatched is also another good one. They made a Netflix series, but it's, I think, in Hindi with a little bit of English. But Mismatched is cool. It's about two Indian college students at a school, university in San Francisco. So
San Francisco be the happening place.
Mm-hmm. A lot of love there.
All the content. I know.
Geneva, what are you enjoying in the romance world at the moment, apart from the courtship?
Well, you know, it's still going on USA and Peacock. It's got, you know, some crazy, they've brought in new men getting jealous, insecure. There's a lot of crazy things going on that particular season. But yeah, I don't know. What have I been watching? That's really a good question, because I've really been doing school, so I haven't been watching as much. This is kind of like not really romance, but I mean, I guess there's romance and relationships in it. I've been watching Selling Sunset. So if
people
like
having relationships
homes,
with money.
Yes. If you like beautiful homes, really nice outfits,
and relationships, good hair.
Yes. Beautiful hair. Nice relationships that may or may not exist anymore.
God, it was a weird season. I'm sorry.
Check it out. A reunion is to come in about a week or two. I think about 2 weeks. So that's definitely something I've been watching. But I haven't watched a lot recently, because it's more been just the standard stuff. So, yeah, there's always good things.
Excellent Great. Recommendation for all of you out there who are studying really hard and need something a little lighter, would you say, Geneva?
Yes, love yes, it. Yes.
And
it's a great study break.
With that, I think the last thing left to do, y'all, is maybe rank our siblings.
Yes.
Let's do it. Does anyone want to go first? Sarah, you sounded the most enthused.
I'm happy to go first. I can't remember what I did last time, but this time I'm still putting Eloise at number one. I think she was slightly betrayed by the writers this season, but she remains my flame, and I have high hopes for her next season. Very closely followed by Benedict. I could actually put them first equal. Violet is my number three. Bridgerton, I'm very fond of her. Again, she was given a slightly back seat, but I think it's very insightful to think that she'll move forward when it's one of the ladies. Now, Anthony, I was always an Anthony stan last season, but I think he's moved up in my rankings. He comes next. Then I put Colin, but I have hopes that Colin will move up. Then Hyacinth, then Gregory, then Daphne, and then Felicia, whatever the one that starts with F is, because we don't know.
Fran.
Not that. I mean, she's basically non-existent, though.
She's non-existent. So by that, I mean, at least we saw her in season one.
She's so getting married.
Oh, my God. I love it. Kirsten, do you have a ranking?
Okay, so I'm just kind of doing this as I go. It's very hard for me to keep this straight at this point between what is books and what is – I don't even know.
Just tell us.
I'm going from worst to best is what I'm going to do. Ooh. And worst is going to be Daphne, because she's a sexual assaulter. Agreed. And that puts her at the bottom of the pile for me. Mm-hmm. Then I'm going to put – and here's the thing. I never had strong feelings about her in the books, but the show is irritating me to all hell. So Eloise is second last because I'm annoyed.
Yeah,
I don't care. I hate what they've done with her. I just don't like her. I am then going to put Benedict, only because the books don't do that much with him and I don't know where the show is taking him. Then we'll do Francesca, because we don't know her yet and I don't know what they're going to do with her. Then Gregory, because I think his story's stupid and he's just a little kid right now. and then I'm going to do Anthony, Hyacinth, Colin. So Anthony has moved up my rankings a lot, but Colin is still my number one.
Oh, I like it.
Gregory did have that very sweet scene with Anthony, one of my favorite scenes of the show.
His book is interesting. It's definitely after the series has fully jumped the shark, but if, as long as you can accept that, you'll be able to enjoy it.
I mean, we'll be so deep in it by then. Yeah, I think we will. I love it. Geneva, do you have yours?
Sure. So, you know, I think a lot of this is, even though we did have some criticism of her in this particular season, Eloise still remains my personal favorite. And then I would say Colin, you know, I think that's a mixture of book content and show content. Benedict would be next for me. You know, Anthony's definitely moved up the ranks. Not that I disliked him. I think I was just more annoyed last season with him and just how he was handling things and Daphne and stuff like that. But, you know, I think we really do get to see more dimension from Anthony and you really get to know him because this is theoretically his, you know, his book, his story. So it was very, very exciting. And, you know, obviously the haircut helped. So that's also great too. Then I would say, after that, I'd probably say Hyacinth. Then I would say Gregory. Then for similar reasons like Kirsten, I would say Daphne. She was slightly a bit more bearable, I think, this season. You know, she had a lot of growth.
She was a bit smug. Bit smug, yeah, for me.
She's married now. She knows everything.
No, yeah, she knows. She's more knowledgeable. She knows a lot of things. She talked some sense into Anthony. So, you know, I gave her seventh. And, you know, Francesca, well, she just wasn't really there. So, I, you know, she's going to be last for me for now.
Great. And as for me, Benedict is still my number one. Anthony has jumped up to number two.
Wow.
Daphne is number, no, sorry, Colin is number three. So I hate women. And then Daphne, and then Eloise, and then Hyacinth, because I think she's like really quirky and they gave her good moments in this one. Gregory, after that, because I like him, and then Fran, because listen, where's she at? So I think that is my ranking, and I didn't change too much from last time, but Anthony really jumped, I think, because of Kate, not because of Anthony, but it's okay. And with that, anything else? The Dark Walk.
We did it!
We made it. We are now done with the Dark Walk. Thank you to all of you for listening to us, for leaving us reviews. We're so appreciative. Sorry if we didn't read yours on the pod, but we read it and we're so, so appreciative of you. And with that, we will see you in season 3, whenever that may be. And with that, Geneva, where can people find you?
People can find me at Peace Love Jen on Twitter, where I tweet about all the reality TV I'm watching and random things in life. Current things I'm watching are BB Can, Survivor 42, Temptation Island, The Courtship, now X on the Beach. Just a lot of random things. So if you're interested to know my thoughts, you can follow me there where I'm tweeting about them. In addition, you can always check my link tree for any up-to-date content and anything that I'm doing. And then, you know, you could also support Silent Podcasts, and we're on Anchor, Spotify, and Apple.
Love it. And Sarah, where can people find you?
They can follow me at Sarah Carradine, where I will tell you everything that I'm podcasting about, where I will be retweeting, commenting, and liking an enormous amount. You can hear me on Silent Podcasts talking about Survivor US. I had a fantastic time at 3 in the morning with Gia Worthy and the Real Weird Sisters back together again. The last time the four of us were together, we were on the Real Weird Sisters podcast, putting the contestants from Survivor 41 through the sorting buff to see where they landed. And we'll do the same with the contestants of 42, but we talked about the actual show there on Silent Podcasts. And on RHAP, you can listen to me and Murray Forth on Crime Scene, S-E-E-N, talking about true crime with some amazing guests, some of whom are on this very Dark Walk with us now.
Perfect. And Kirsten?
Yes, so you can find me talking about BoJack Horseman every week with Lindsay Wilson over at BoJack Horse Pod. You can catch me talking about Temptation Island with the amazing Maggie Morgan over on the Hot Dummies on Islands feed on RHAP. You can catch me talking Riverdale with Frail Mary over on Kowski Cast. That's Cow with a K. And last but certainly not least, you can catch me talking about all of the mess and pop culture, celeb gossip, trending topics with Sasha, who's here as well, on Mess Magnets. We have a 6-week trial run. So from please go subscribe so that we get to keep doing it because I don't want to lose my weekly podcast with Sasha.
Oh, period.
Right? Follow me everywhere at Kirsten Said What.
Great. And for me, you can find me on Twitter at funsides_04. I'll also be on this week's Big Brother recap on Thursday and on the RHAP Survivor feedback show as well, which I believe gets released on Saturdays. In addition to Mess Magnets, of course, send us all your mess so that we can cover it. And with that, one last time, thank you so much for listening. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.